morning. I'm Sam Smith, and this is the Sunday Supplement. On our panel this morning, I'm joined by Fine Gael TD and former Minister for Education, Mary O'Rourke. Fine Gael TD and spokesperson on Enterprise, Trade and Employment, that's Leo Varadkar. And the Labour Party Senator, Alex White, who was a candidate last week in the Dublin South by-election. We're also going to be talking live to our US correspondent, Ed Hayes, from New York. And of course, you can text us 0834 100 102, that's thanks to 3 Mobile. Or just lie back, listen to us on todayfm.com. And don't forget, if you miss any part of the show today, you can download our podcast every week through iTunes, or just go straight through to todayfm.com. Anyway, back to the future. Last week's selection, what's it going to mean as we're going forward? That phrase we all hate. Anyway, was there a seismic change in Irish politics? Was there a massive swing to the left? Or did they just rearrange the votes on the right? Or are people just sick to death of the government? Neither Fine Gael nor Labour seem to want an election despite their protestations. And is there going to be a reshuffle? Now, someone suggested it's not going to be until the end of the year, but the one thing they all seem to be agreed on, Mary Coughlan, or Mary, is Mary Coughlan is going to go, that she's become something of an embarrassment almost now.
Are you talking to me, Sam?
Yep.
Yes. Well, I don't think she has, but of course, I mean, I think she's become the focal point for many writers because of some earlier mistakes, perhaps in language or facts she didn't know, and the general sort of a bonhomie which she exudes, and which is her character and her main characteristic. So I wouldn't go along with that. But at the same time, and you see, gripes have to have a focal point. It's no good if the gripes don't have a focal point. So they have aimed to make her their focal point. And I'm not going into is it sexist or is it not, because that's silly old gab. But I do think that she has become the focal point for whatever reason. And you need a scapegoat. You actually need someone to kick around.
Or do the opposition spot the weakest link in the government and their, you know, all their attention
no,
is going
the
on
No, the papers on the Sunday Independent today reports that it's the backbenchers who are, and they've named them, sorry, I didn't read the full article now. It's backbenchers who are beefing about her or against her publicly, I think. So I just think they need a scapegoat, and it's wrong to just pick her up and say, give Mary a kick and that'll do.
Yeah, but they're going to have to rejig around that government.
I actually think a rejigging of the cabinet would be a good idea. Perhaps
not now,
maybe in the autumn, when Brian Cowan did say he was going to have a fundamental look at the organisation and at everything within government. So I do think a cabinet reshuffle in the autumn would be a good idea. I speak not from knowledge, but from what I just think myself would be.
Well, you've been in Dáil Éireann for more than a generation and wearing the Fianna Fáil livery all that time.
Yeah, I came here, excuse me, can I get my toothpicks?
No, but it is true. Is this the worst that you can remember?
Yes, it is.
Fianna Fáil? Is this the biggest crisis the party has faced since the emergency period, which the rest of the world called the Second World War?
I think it's, oh yes, certainly. But I do think it's, when you're down, your only way back is up. Which is so trite to be, but it is true. So I do think if we all get at what is bothering each of us. But I go back to a fundamental thing, which I said here in your show before, Sam. It's very, somebody's talked about we have to become a crusading party again. Of course we have, but how do you crusade if what you're talking about is cuts in, be it social welfare or be it housing aid or whatever? It's very hard to crusade against a background of financial cuts.
You're doing your duty, I suppose.
Yes, exactly. That is crusading in itself. But how can you cope? It's very difficult to cope with that and still become more vibrant.
Well, there's also the point, I suppose, Mary, been around for a long time. Like, what is it, 20 of the last 23 years Fianna Fáil have been in government? People just sick to death looking at you. And if you're giving them bad news, as you have been doing non-stop now for, what, a year nearly, people are bound to say, for God's sake, give us a break. Let's have fresh faces.
And the ironic twist to that is, and again, it's something I've said at our own parliamentary party meeting Tuesday evening, the ironic twist to that is the two parties who are to my left, well, no, Fine Gael and Labour, who are here, in your two contributors, as well as myself, they didn't say, they never said, when we get in, we will have cuts too. But it was a case of, oh, I'll get you back your medical card. I'll ensure that this particular money will remain intact. Most of the canvassers in local elections, if they didn't say it openly, by their very demeanour, they led to a belief that that was what would happen. If they got into office, everything in the garden would be rosy. And of course, it will be even less rosy.
Leo Varadkar, just looking at you there is that. You've spoken about non-specified cuts, really. Changes in the public service, but you haven't really spelled out what you're going to do. And what you're going to do, obviously, is going to run headlong in direct conflict with what the Labour Party have said, isn't that right?
We actually have specified a huge number of the...
Your cuts in the public service, for instance?
Well, they're all published. They're published in our...
And how many civil servants are going to be gone?
The number that we've used is 15,000. 15,000 voluntary and redundancies and early retirements.
Voluntarily?
Yeah, and that's very doable, you know, between a decent voluntary redundancy package, early retirement and natural wastage. It's very, very doable. It's only about 3% reduction in staff.
It makes it sound very easy. Ah, for God's sake.
I think it's achievable.
Until it begins.
The government on their own looks like they're going to achieve something like 3 or 4,000 this year, you know. So that's and, you know, there isn't consternation about it from what I can see. You know, in terms of Labour, you know, the reality is we are different parties. People say all politicians are the same and all parties are the same. People actually care to look at our policies can see that they're not. That we actually have three different parties now with three very different divisions as to where the country will have to go. We're not asking for people to vote for Labour.
Sure, if we can just bring you back to that now.
But just for anyone's interest, our fiscal strategy is published. We've actually published it twice. It's detailed. It goes over 4 years. There's plenty of columns and plenty of listed measures.
Taxes, are you going to increase them?
No, and that's what's different about our strategy is that ours relies on reductions in spending rather than taxes. Yeah,
Back to that, do you think last week, after looking at the outcome of those elections, that there was a major swing to the left, as has been claimed mainly by those on the left? Do you think it's a rearranging of the vote on the right, and how much of that is a protest vote against the current government?
Well, I think what you have to look at the facts, and you know, there's a few definite facts there. One fact is that, you know, Fine Gael is, for the first time, got more first preference votes than any other party. That's never happened before, so that's totally new. We've had recessions before and emergencies before and hunger strikes before and you name it. This has never happened before. So that's definitely the case. There is a swing to Fine Gael. Fine Gael is now the largest party in the state for the first time, at least in local and European elections, but a general election is going to be different. I accept that. Labour is definitely up, so there is also a swing to the left. Labour support has gone up to 14.5%. And there's also been a moderate increase in what they'd call extreme left candidates.
And there's also been a lot of independents around the country.
There have, yeah, but you know, there's been a lot of focus about sort of, you know, in media conversations about the, you know, the left of Labour vote. You know, for example, people for profit, Socialist Party, and so on. If you actually count it up, between the lot of them, they have about 10 or 15 councillors. There actually are more independent
and
PDs.
Sinn
Féin is down. Yeah, static down in Dublin and static everywhere else. So, you know, actually, there are more. You know, there are more Fine Gaels got elected in Dunleary alone than far left candidates. But they're different and they're interesting, and therefore they get attention.
Alex, you said something towards the end of the campaign, and you were very publicly against the new big thing, which was George Lee. But you said something there which struck me, and that is that, you know, words to the effect of, you can only be a political virgin once. And that is that George Lee, as much of his vote came from the fact that he hadn't been in politics before.
Well, just so it's clear, I'm not dedicating my life against George Lee.
No, but
that's not my raison d'etre. The fact is that we were in an election together and may well be in future elections together or against each other. So to that extent, I suppose, we're pitted against each other.
The Darby and Joan.
Yeah, but I can assure you it's not going to be my single preoccupation for the rest of my political life.
No, but it was an interesting observation that...
Well, no, I mean, I think that's... You know, yeah, I mean, you know, people come into politics from outside, as they're entitled to do. They have an attraction, which is that they're not a politician, and I'm afraid that is an attraction. But that attraction goes 30 seconds after you become a politician, and they've got to do other things. And I'm not saying, of course, I'm not saying that George can't or won't do other things that will attract votes to him in the future. That's to be seen.
Sure, well, but why I'm saying that is that, do you know, where the Labour Party and Fine Gael are quite rightly priding themselves in the big votes that they got, but there's also this thing which is, by definition, anti-politician, by the fact that people are more prepared to vote for people who haven't been involved in politics before.
I think that's true. I think that is there, and I think to the extent that it's... I mean, it may be a measure of the... unfortunately, low esteem in which politics and politicians have been held, you know, in the last years. But I'm just picking up on that point and linking it to what you were discussing with Leo there in relation to ideology, and has there been a swing to the left or a swing to the right? And I think Leo correctly said, in fact, ironically, there's been a swing to the right and there's been a swing to the left. And what does that mean? I think that means that there's actually a swing towards ideas and ideology. And ideology doesn't have to be a dirty word, actually, in politics, because I don't think we've had too much ideology in Irish politics. I think we've had too little ideology in Irish politics. And I never would have supported the PDs, for example. I never would have voted for them. But I think that they did come forward at certain stages with some clarity about what they stood for. And I think it put it up to other people to be clear about their politics. And I think that now we have, and where I disagree with Mary, I have to say, I disagree with the position that Fianna Fáil has taken, is that what they've been punished for bringing in cuts, and you know the problem is that they're having to take these harsh measures. I think that's part of the reason why they did badly, but the other reason is that people are now seeing that they in fact caused many of the problems by the decisions they made in the last 10 or 15 years. I mean, the amount of people who said to me, quite genuinely said to me, they have destroyed the country. The party I have voted for all my life have destroyed the country.
And
this was said to me over and over again, so it's not just me. You know, I'm not coming in here this morning.
Would you see then a parallel between the Fianna Fáil party and, say, Gordon Brown's Labour Party in Britain?
Well, there are some parallels, I suppose.
Well, there
in terms
cabinet,
of longevity.
His cabinet are deserting him.
That's
seven,
true.
Seven ministers.
They are going down the toilet quickly, are they?
To wrap up the point about ideology, I think that in Ireland, and there are many good people in all parties, but I think that we can't forever think that Ireland is different from everywhere else, that we don't have politics about ideas, which is about what do you do about the public finances, how do you deal with it, do you have state involvement and a robust state involvement in industrial policy, do you have regulation of financial services, strong regulation right across the board. These are the sorts of issues that people disagree on, and they're entitled to disagree on, but that's what politics is about.
Yeah, it is, Alex. Just looking though at the elections across Europe, was hardly a big swing to the left across Europe.
I agree that the left didn't do well across Europe, and I'm disappointed about that. But that doesn't take from the point that I'm making, which is that across Europe, in fact, it is a contest between the left and right. I'm making a broader point here. I'm not saying that the left always has to win. I'll always be on the left, and I'll be arguing left-wing politics. But that doesn't mean to say that, you know,
I
run away and die just because we had a bad day.
We
had a very good day in Ireland. Very good day in Ireland. Dublin, for example, finished the point.
More
Dublin,
than left and
Dublin,
right, though,
Dublin. Well, yeah, I know it's an easy thing. Left and right is an easy tag. I know, but we've had it for centuries. We understand what it means, right?
It's not that meaningless.
Ideology, ideas about which way you should go and how you should solve problems.
Historically,
has been tagged left and right. Okay, that's about as far as it gets in terms of how useful it is. But it's reasonably useful.
Yeah, Mary, you're looking at that. How do you counter the charge that Fianna Fáil have been around for 20 of the past 23 years and so on? You know, I mean, but...
I can't count to that.
In any democracy, though, can you not understand that people will say, for God's sake, is it not time to let somebody else ride the motorbike?
Yeah, but I mean, just to answer you firstly, I can't counter it because it is a fact of life. Yeah. So there you are.
Victims of your success?
No, the people have chosen at all of those occasions to say yes, ride on, if we're going on the motorbike analogy. So maybe they are deciding it's time to get off the bike. I think next week is National Bike Week. But anyway, that's only a side aberration
on your bike.
But yes, we have been in government and perhaps, and some of our own people would say to you, we had a meeting on Friday night, a meeting in Athlone of our party executive, and it was full of private joy for how well we had done in Westmeath and particularly in Athlone. We did, yes. But also full of angst by people who said, what has gone wrong? What has happened to our party? Would we be better in a period in opposition? So would we?
Well,
I don't know.
I think you would. Shannon, though, Mary, you've often described Athlone as the Barcelona on the Shannon.
Well, so it is. We went off and had a few glasses of wine and said, there we are. But we did, yes.
Well, listen, I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll take a break now. So you can text us 083-4100-102. That's thanks to 3 Mobile.
With VHI Healthcare, dedicated to one thing and one thing only, your health. The Sunday Supplement, 100 to 102 Today FM.
Welcome back. I'm Sam Smith. This is the Sunday Supplement. On our panel today, we have Mary O'Rourke, we have Leo Varadkar, and we have Alex White. We're going to be talking to Ed Hayes live from New York later in the programme. And of course, you can text us 083-4100-102. That's thanks to 3 Mobile. We've had a few texts in. One says, Sam, I text you as an active FF member. I cannot understand the failure of the party leadership to act. There is an urgent need for change at the FFHQ. It appears that newer FF TDs like Chris Andrews, Sean Connick, etc. are the only ones in touch with reality. That's Joe from Glasnevin. Another message comes in. Will someone tell this government that they have no mandate to government? They have lost the support of the people in the recent elections. They need to call a general election to look for a new mandate to govern this country through its economic crisis. Leo Varadkar, everybody has said, and I believe I was just looking at Stephen Collins yesterday, you don't really want an election at the moment, do you? The opposite.
I wouldn't want one in the next couple of weeks because I'm really tired and I'm looking forward to it.
It wouldn't suit you.
It's the first weekend I've had off since early March and I'm really enjoying it. But I certainly would like to see an election before the end of the year.
Early next year, I think you guys said, once the budget is in and so on.
They can really lacerate us.
The reality is, we, as an opposition party, we don't have any control over when the election is going to be. That's going to be down either to the Greens or to factors beyond our control.
Yeah, but you see, you're hypocritical to keep saying, we want an election now, when most people know, you don't really.
But why wouldn't we want an election? If there was an election now, we'd be in power. And that's where we want to be.
Yeah, but because it would suit you more next year when there was a budget brought in.
There's a certain element of thinking within Fine Gael and also with the neighbour, and of people who think that way. I don't think that way. We've been in opposition for so long now that I would rather take the chance now than be in a situation in 2 years where we mightn't actually.
Just something that has just struck me there.
And it's not just for the sake of Paris, because things have to be done, and like people like me. And everyone isn't the same. People like me who get into politics to do things and to be there at difficult times.
No, you might not.
I don't want to be a minister in a government where I go around opening off licenses and things. I don't have any interest
in that. Yeah, well, if I can ask you.
I want to fix the economy. I want to be able to.
You do, but can you answer me one thing now for Fine Gael? What happened last week down with Frank Flannery? I mean, there was this window dressing job done where one day he was director of elections, the next day he was director of organisation. This was presented as a demotion. Did anything actually happen?
It actually wasn't presented as anything, unfortunately.
Not the media again?
No, unfortunately some members of our parliamentary party see fit to talk to the media about what goes on at parliamentary meetings when they shouldn't. The restructuring and form announcements aren't going to be made for a few more weeks. What was indicated was that there would be a new director of elections.
He was being punished, though, for seeking Sinn Féin transfers in the election.
What was said at the parliamentary party meeting was that he'd come into a future parliamentary party meeting to explain himself and that he wouldn't be director of elections for the general election, somebody else would. Mm. Not that he was going to be sacked from his job.
Well, that would be punishment, I would have thought, no?
Yes.
Yeah, well, one thing actually has been striking me since the election, and I meant to ask Somnath and Fine Gael, now that you're the biggest party in the country for the first time, which is no mean achievement, do you think that vindicates your stand on the treaty, going back to the thing?
Coming from a constituency where the Fine Gael vote fluctuates between 9% and 27%, I doubt it's anything to do with the treaty.
Alex, mm-hmm. just going on yourself, and now you're the biggest party in Dublin. How can you guys capitalise on that? What can you do to...
Well, it's true that there is limitations to the powers of local authorities, and that's one of the difficulties, I suppose, that we have. I mean, it's been a fantastic result, a huge number of Labour councillors elected right across the four local authorities. I'm sure they're looking now at what the possibilities are. They're discussing with other parties that they may make arrangements with in terms of the new, you know, how they will run the new councils. I hope we will get to take initiatives, literally to, you know, improve the city, make it a better place to live in. And I think that's what Labour people will do. I think that's been a terrific result for us. I think it's essentially a left-wing city. Sorry, Leo, doesn't like left and right. That's what it is.
Like Paris or...
Perhaps, yeah. I think it's a fantastic achievement for us and for Eamon Gilmore. But there are limitations. Now, we do have this directly elected mayoral contest coming up in the next period.
Down here, directly elected
and
mayor.
I certainly think that those
will
results
that
demonstrate...
if there's a change of government?
Well, I presume it will. I mean, I certainly am in favour of directly elected mayor, but can I just say, in terms of the outcome of that, if the left has its act together and there is a candidate that has broad support across the board led by the Labour Party, I think we will easily win that contest.
Tareen, would Mannix Flynn need to join your party to become the first directly elected?
Mannix would be very welcome to join, but I'm not sure if that's what he has in mind.
No, but actually, many people at the count last week were saying to me, if they were having a directly elected mayor, Mannix Flynn would be the first directly elected mayor of the city. And do you not think that it's likely to, or it's very possible that it could be an independent person or something like that? Because I think looking at, you know...
I suppose it's possible. Look, it's purely speculative. I mean, if you look at the outcome of the elections across Dublin, aggregate all the results across the city, certainly the Labour Party would be in a very strong position.
Who would be your candidate to be...
Well, we actually genuinely don't have a candidate.
No, the party doesn't, but you must have somebody in mind yourself that you'd...
I don't.
No,
I genuinely don't.
Who,
no, there's quite a few people that could step up to it. I mean, everybody from Rory Quinn right across the board. I mean, there's plenty of people who've shown, I think, fantastic... Leo, you'd like that, Leo, but I don't think that's possible. I think we've a lot of good candidates, potential candidates. I genuinely can't answer
Rory
questions.
Rory Quinn, then.
Rory may not thank me for saying this. I'm just saying, you asked me for a name, I've given you a name, but I think there are many others.
Possibility.
There are many others.
Would you hang on to it, Leo, if you find yourself in government next year before... you know, the legislation was enacted by the current government. Would you hang on to that? Do you think there should be a directly elected mayor?
I agree with the principle of directly elected mayors, and it is party policy.
Would you give them the powers that the city manager has at the moment?
That's actually what I was going to get to. I think a directly elected mayor would be a pointless exercise if it's just somebody who goes around in a carriage wearing a chain and, you know, chairs the Dublin Regional Council and, you know, signs off on guidelines or something. There's only a point in having directly elected mayors if we've real local government, and that means transferring executive power from managers and officials back to councillors. And the trend for the last 20 years of government has been to take power away from councillors.
And
that's very much where we want to go.
Well, then there's a measure of agreement between us and Fine Gael on that. So
and the candidate.
Well, the candidate
is the one. Yeah, go on.
I think there's a very good chance.
Mitchell would be very tempted by that.
I haven't discussed that with him, but I think he'd be an excellent candidate. He's nearly got 100,000 votes in
And he's very much identified as a Dublin guy, isn't he?
But again, now it's something I never discussed with him. And Gay,
who's his substitute?
Gay actually loves being an MEP. So, you know, I don't know whether he would be interested in that. But again, I don't think somebody like Gay Mitchell would be interested in it if it wasn't an executive role. I don't think he'd be interested in some sort of ceremonial post.
It certainly would be a great honour, Mary, wouldn't it?
Yes, it has to. Power must move from the executive.
Well, now, Bertie Ahern, I don't think so anymore. more. These elections seem to have diminished him considerably.
Well, for the Ahern family, certainly, and for, albeit on from that then to the role he had played. But Bertie has huge powers of reinvention. We all know that. Mm. His huge powers of surprising.
His powers of invention as well.
Well, reinvention, I said. And I just can see that he would strike a chord with Dublin people.
He would. Did you not get a feeling last week that when one was looking at his older brother running for election and losing not just the by-election but then his council seat and so on, in an area where the Aherns triumphed for a long time, they seemed to organise everything, it was really gothic, his fall in
it was huge, and Maurice Ahern is a decent fellow, as most people who go for politics are. I mean, there's no point in we all making them footballs.
Yeah, but he had a sense of entitlement, Mary, that a lot of people
did he express that? I didn't
Well, number one, he entered public life at age 60. He wanted to be a councillor. He became a councillor. He wanted to become Lord Mayor. His brother fixed that for him. Then he wanted to become a TD age 70. Now, his brother couldn't fix that for him, but he did try very hard. And I think perhaps the voters might have seen that. Alex, do you?
I think it was a huge story, what happened in Dublin Central. I grew up very near Bertie Ahern, and I witnessed, you know, for the last 30 years, the operation that was the Ahern operation, and it is really is essentially dead and buried. I mean, it is extraordinary to see it. And I predict one thing. I think Fianna Fáil Party has shown enormous endurance historically in Ireland, and I think that one of the things that's going to happen in the next couple of years, a new narrative will develop within Fianna Fáil which will not be very kind to Bertie Ahern, and I think that may take a while for that ship to turn.
What is the new narrative now?
Well, we saw it happening in relation to Mr. Haughey. We saw it happening in relation to other people who essentially had to be ditched, just to be blunt about it. And I think that, I mean, there are various reports to emerge in the next couple of years from the Mahon Tribune and elsewhere, and I think
and
that
Fianna
Fáil will face the future because they're very good at facing the future when they get their act together, and I think that Bertie will not come out well out of that.
Well, listen.
Let's wait and see. That's a you're presaging that to happen. I don't think so. And I think that the knowing him as I did very, very well, he is able to surmount things.
Oh, he was the most gifted politician of his generation,
yes,
without doubt.
Suddenly to sort
three
of
times
say, Taoiseach, that's all
phenomenal
gone.
Success.
It's not true. Yeah.
It is
a big ask, but he's well capable of answering big asks.
And three times Taoiseach like that, that is a phenomenal achievement, which I suspect it's not going to be done. I don't see you think you see that happening for Enda,
do
you?
The thing is, politics, when something's in the past,
Leo,
it's in the past.
You know. Is Enda going to be a three-times Taoiseach?
I think he'll be a two-term Taoiseach.
He's going to be a one-time Taoiseach.
He'll definitely be that.
Well, listen, we can argue
but
with
that. But it's an interesting point, just touching on that, double mayor elections, because if we don't have a general election, what I would think will happen is that in 2011 we'll have a presidential election and a Dublin mayor election on the same day. And that's going to be very, very interesting content.
Yeah. And you know what? We will talk about candidates for that. But first, we're going to have to take a break. So don't you forget to text us 083-4100-102. That's thanks to 3 Mobile.
With VHI Healthcare, dedicated to one thing and one thing only, your health. The Sunday Supplement, 100-102, Today FM.
Welcome back, I'm Sam Smith. This is the Sunday Supplement. On our panel today, we have the Fianna Fáil TD and former Minister for Education, Mary O'Rourke, with the Fine Gael TD and spokesperson on enterprise, trade and employment. That's Leo Varadkar. And we have the Labour Party Senator, Alex White. We're going to be talking to Ed Hayes later. And of course, you can still text us 083-4100-102. That's thanks to 3 Mobile. Anyway, a lot of things happened last week, but one of the things that intrigued me, Mary O'Rourke, which is something you do know a bit about, is what are we going to do with religious and education?
Can I just give a mighty giggle? Something you do know a bit about. So up to now I've been redundant or vacuous.
Well, not at all, Mary. That was careless and nasty of me to say it. It certainly was not
I'm only having a
that.
Laugh, for goodness sake.
And in case there's anybody out there, that's what it is. It's certainly not anybody laughing at the appalling
things in the corner until education comes up. But anyway, yes, I think this arose out of Rory Quinn's plaintiff cry that he wasn't able to get the information which he required via
door
questions, who owns the schools. And in the case of the primary schools where the church is the patron, so to speak, the site would have been owned by the church. The site on which the school is built would have been church land in general. Now, there have been around the country guys who have given very nobly plots of land for schools to be built, but in general, historically, they would have been church-owned, the sites. Then the department would have come in with money to build the school and the parish, what they call a parish contribution, which is part of the alms given by people when they go to church. But part of that goes to the building of a school. So it's kind of a hybrid of ownership of it. But countless times it has been proven that people like the diversity. You have those, the regular primary schools, for want of another word. You have the Gaelscoileanna, which are patron-led, giving great... I opened a huge 16 schoolroom new Gaelscoileanna throne on Friday. You have the multi-denomination, which is hugely influential and popular, and that people like the diversity. So I don't think it's going to help. I genuinely don't think it's going to help education if overnight every school becomes either multi-denomination or whatever is in independent hands.
Well, that now, doesn't seem to be a demand for that, Mary.
No,
I suspect there's still a big demand for Catholic education.
Yes, I would think so. The VEC system is very good too now, I think, out in your area.
It's only getting started.
It's rather like a multi-denominational in under another guise, isn't
it? Well,
it is
multi-denominational. Yeah. The community national schools, yeah.
But actually, yeah, all
it
schools.
Is, but we've been conducting this so far and nobody has mentioned the war. Like, I mean, what those religious orders
I think that's wrong, though. It's wrong to, you know, the issue of the abuse that happened in industrial schools is not the same issue as what patrons we should have for primary schools.
But they're the same people teaching in them, are they not?
Well, they're actually not, because...
But they're from the same order, ethos is similar.
No, but for example, if we're talking about patronage in schools, there are a very large number of Church of Ireland primary schools all over the country. Are we suggesting that they should also transfer
those
schools?
No, but I don't think the Church of Ireland has been through tribunals.
But the point I'm making, if we're going to have a debate about how we organise our school system and what we should do about the current patronage structure, it should be about what we want for education in the future and what parents want for their kids now.
You can't ignore what went on in a lot of those schools.
It shouldn't be the reason why we make decisions.
But clearly there's a link. I mean, it's a bit churlish to say that there's no link. Clearly there is a link. I mean, the schools are owned by, in some cases, congregations, in other cases, by the diocese. By the local Catholic diocese. In fact, I'd say probably most of them are.
And don't forget the reason why.
I mean, we had some debate about this in the 1990s, and I think we should return to it, not just because of the recent controversy. We should return to it anyway, but I think they are linked. But the point is, the reason why the Archbishop is the patron of the school, or most of the schools, is because, in fact, he does own the school. So there is a link between ownership and patronage. So let's not get away from that. I think there is a debate to be had. And the question of choice, I mean, I agree that there should be the maximum amount of choice for parents. I mean, my children went to local Catholic schools, primary schools, but in fact there was no choice in reality in terms of a local school. Many people send their kids, they want their biggest thing, particularly in urban and rural areas, they want to send their children to the nearest school. The nearest good school is what we all want, where we all want to send our children, and very often there isn't in fact a choice, a genuine choice. But then you have to ask the question, what level of choice can the state with its resources actually vindicate? You can't have, it's just not going to be possible to have a choice of every type of school for every parent in the country, in their local area. It won't be possible.
Yeah, Alex, you're sounding very reasonable.
And that gets you into the
there.
Area then of deciding. And I actually don't think, I think that the day has come when we should reopen this question of church control.
Do you think the state should take over the schools?
I personally
do think
that there should be a move towards the state.
Would that not be contrary to the Constitution?
No, I don't believe it would be contrary to the Constitution, but I think we should include within that, I just want to finish the point because it's important, major provision to be made for religious education to a high level that would satisfy parents who want their children educated in a particular religion.
It's not that you're giving a gift of this, Alex. It says it in the Constitution that the country must provide.
The answer is, in my view, it's very simple. Why not allow parents and teachers in schools to decide whether they want to stay under the control of a diocese to continue to be a Catholic school, or whether they want to opt into the new the new state-run VEC community school structure, because, you know, and there's...
But there are new parents to cause in future generations. I mean, the existing parents could be decided periodically, where schools could decide opting in and opting out according to a particular view at a time. That's not realistic. But Alex Leo, would this be, how would you vote it in?
Like, I mean, would you ask the parents to vote it?
I think that'd be the right thing to do. And there would be, like, for example, in my constituency, there'd be... a large number of Catholic parish schools, and in my view, most parents want to keep it that way. They want their child to be able to do their communion confirmation through the school. They want to continue to have the involvement of the church and volunteer and the voluntary benefits that come with that. But there would be one or two other schools as well where the vast majority of the parents would not be Catholics anymore, and they may wish to opt into a community national school structure, and I think they should be able to do that. And there, in fairness, there has been a willingness, at least verbally, from the Archbishop to do that.
In fact, the Archbishop of Dublin has said that in many cases he thinks that, as I understand him to say, that there, that he wants to actually pull away from...
Opt out from
running primary schools.
Yeah, well, in all this furore
Let people in their communities decide what type of school. But that Ryan report has clouded everything, I think it's the most significant thing that's happened in this state.
One other thing, don't forget, there is a new another report due soon, which makes this even more relevant, which is the Dublin Archdiocese report in relation to...
Which perhaps would be more likely to impact on schools. But the one thing is...
The alternative to having a diversity in education provision, the alternative to having religious parishes, groups and orders and charities like Educate Together and so on, the alternative to having them controlling education is to have the state take over. There's been plenty of reports about the state and how badly the state has treated children as well. So, you know, let's not forget that too.
But the churches are not, in fact, running the schools.
I mean, the nonsense of it is, when you talk about church-run schools, there are no church people running the schools. They're all lay people. The Archbishop is there in the background and he has his appointees.
There's a school board.
Now, the one thing that did prevail in this country, and it certainly was one of the things said, was one of the reasons why we got such great investment from abroad is because of our education system. It did work, there's no question about that. It is a good education system.
Yeah, the 3 hours work if you get a basic, good education.
Did the church choose the teachers who were in the school if you were going to go for a job...
When I went, that was in secondary school now, but you go and you're interviewed by the then chairman of the board of management. But chairmen of boards of management are all lay people now. They are not church people because there aren't any more orders in primary schools. They might be the very one, I'm not going to say the odd nun because that has a funny ring to it, but there might be just one nun, perhaps quite elderly, or one brother, maybe quite elderly too. But by and large, they're all people from the locality who would know the makeup of people coming forward. And you're interviewed, and then you get your job, or you don't get your job, dependent upon that. But the church acts in a sort of an honorary patron way. The parish priest would be the bishop's representative, I suppose, as chairman of the board. But in many, many cases, Andrew, one of the things I put into the green paper, there used to be a time it was mandatory to have a clergyman of whatever ilk as chairman of the board. That is no longer. Anybody can be chairman of the board, man, woman, out in the world or in the village or town.
Yeah. Going back to the changes in this country, obviously that Ryan report is the most shocking document I've seen enter public life for a long time. And after
you never
the discussion,
see worse again. None of us will ever see worse than that.
Like, I mean, a state where cruelty to children seemed to be endemic for so many years. But tell me, Leo, how will? I mean, Fine Gael, I think, is preparing itself for government next year, this year, whenever. How will you address those things? Because Fine Gael is seen as being very close to the church, isn't it?
I, That's news to me, I have to tell you. I don't think there are any more. I suppose Labour would be a more secular party than Fine Gael, and certainly are getting more secular all the time, aggressively secular in the case of Rory Quinn, but I don't think we're any closer to the church than Fianna Fáil is.
Aggressively secular.
One thing Rory Quinn said...
Well, he was even in the papers today suggesting that Libertas, Opus Dei and Spock are going to take over control of schools. Like, I think that's getting into the nutty end of...
Rory Quinn said that members of secret organisations were heavily involved. Now, this at one time used to be the Masons in the UK who were involved all over the police and so forth. Do you think that secret Catholic organisations have an undue influence
in Irish politics? What I do know is that certain basic information has been sought from the Department of Education in relation to schools and ownership of schools. And I think even the Minister for Education has said, as I read the papers correctly this morning, that that information should be available. Mm. Now, why is it not available? And obviously what Rory did was he asked the question, why is it not made available? What is the problem? Why is there such a tradition of secrecy in the Department of Education? Why did Judge Mary Lefoy find it so difficult to get basic documentation from the Department of Education? When that commission report was set up, it then became the Ryan Commission. Don't forget that a High Court judge, she actually couldn't get the basic information in that department. So why? And people are entitled to ask that question. Now, I don't know whether it's because of secret or not so secret organisations.
But I certainly think
that somebody is entitled to ask the question.
Yeah, but Senator Joe O'Toole said yesterday, I heard him say quite plainly that. And he's the former head of INTO. He said that, and he would name them, I'm glad he's not here to name them now, but that there were people in very senior positions who were members of those religious organisations, which they should be entitled to belong to, but... it does seem that it gives the church an undue influence, or an element within the church, the most conservative, traditional.
The question that Rory Quinn asked was a very valid one. You know, who owns the schools? Who is titled to the land? Who owns the buildings? You know, and if the Department of Education doesn't have an inventory, a list of all the schools in the country, owns the land? You know, who is titled land? That's a reflection more on the incompetence of that department. I don't think it's because they're members of a secret organisation who, you know...
Yeah, but when you look at how... You know, that one department ignored for all of those years those reports of the cruelty to those children.
And you want this department to take over all the primary schools now?
That's nonsensical.
The state was equally culpable for what happened to the children in the industrial schools.
So you don't have any faith in the ability of public servants, excellent public servants now in departments like the Department of Education and other departments to do their job and to run. I mean, that's just
who is their loyalty to? Is it to that organisation or to their employer, the state?
That's not what I said at all. I said if we are going to use the Ryan Commission. If we are going to connect that to the debate about the future of schools, we should acknowledge that the Ryan Commission clearly holds the state equally responsible for what happened to people in the justice as it does to religious orders, and we shouldn't be so foolish as to think that schools that will be taken over and put under state control would provide better education.
We really have to go for a break. Text us 083-400-102. That's thanks to 3 Mobile.
100-102 Today FM, the Sunday supplement with VHI Healthcare, dedicated to one thing and one thing only, your health.
Welcome back. I'm Sam Smith. This is the Sunday Supplement. On our panel today, Mary O'Rourke, Leo Varadkar and Alex White. We're going to be talking to our US correspondent live from New York soon. And of course, you can still text us 083-4100-102. That's thanks to 3 Mobile. And I just got a message which says that it is the duty of the Criminal Assets Bureau to seize the schools to pay the victims of abuse. That's from Brian. Another caller says, every school that receives state funding in any form should be secular. The French have the correct position on this. Anyway, there are other things happening in the world, and the Sunday Telegraph in London have a story today. BBC set to battle with ministers over historic licence fee shake-up. And what it basically says is that up to 100 million of the BBC's money is going to have to pay for public service programmes on ITV, which is suffering because of the big fall-off in advertising. We're going to talk now to Stephen Price, who's the media columnist with the Sunday Times. Stephen, Is there any chance of this happening to RTE, that they will be asked to give up some of their funding to pay for public service broadcasting on other channels or radio stations?
Well, actually, Sam, RTE already does have the licence fee topped slightly, and not a small amount of it goes into the Broadcasting Commission's Sound and Vision scheme, which does actually then become available to other broadcasters. The problem is that RTE also puts in requests to the BCI Sound and Vision scheme and gets some of that money back. I think all of this, the BBC and RTE, has to be seen in the context of the debate that is now either happening or not happening, depending which country you're in, about public service broadcasting and how it's funded. As we know, commercial broadcasters are going through torrid times. Advertising is down terribly, and an awful lot of people see the market as being distorted by the BBC and RTE in different ways. The situation is very different in Ireland because RTE is 55% funded by commercial income. So if you like, it is both a public service broadcaster and also Ireland's biggest commercial broadcaster. Now, I've been writing for quite some time that RTE would get into terrible trouble if the economy took a nosedive, given its funding model, and sure enough, this is happening. So there's kind of one issue. And you have all this kind of peripheral stuff going on the side about presenters' pay packets and all the rest. That doesn't really kind of mean anything.
Stephen, I think we're having a bit of trouble with the line there. We'll come back to you on that. But we are very lucky today to have Alex White here, who, besides being a barrister, besides being
it's
a senator,
he might know something about.
He is Renaissance man.
He knows
everything about everything.
I love this because, you know, it's 15 years since I worked in RTE.
Those years, you have forgotten.
And I wasn't the RTE candidate in the Dublin South by-election.
No. But, and you're also, I think we should tell our listeners, very modest. You are a very modest man. But your expertise was such that you were the one chosen from all of those producers in RTE to produce Gay Byrne, I think. You would be.
No, I do have an opinion about it, but I'm not going to claim that it's any more.
I was claiming that for you. You don't have to claim that.
There is. This debate has been going on since practically the beginning of time, or the beginning of public service broadcasting, is the question of the licence fee, and should the licence fee be available to non-sort of state broadcasters, as it were. Mm. We had the debate here. We
to
had it
ordinary
in the 80s,
people.
We've had it in the 90s. We're still, well, there's ordinary people in RTE as well. I think the nub of it is this, that you could, like, let's say this programme that we are on is clearly a public service type programme because it's a debate. It's not all that different from similar roundtable discussion programmes that happen on RTE, although of course it's of very high quality, but in terms of its format it's the same. So you might say, well, why should this not get the licence fee, whereas Saturday View or the Marion Finucane programme on the other side does have the benefit of it. And I think there is a case for continuing the status quo, and it's this, that if you divide the licence fee up so much, just let me finish the point, if you diffuse it so much across so many different broadcasters, it will actually end up not in fact helping very many at all. And if you then undermine RTE's base, undermine RTE's funding base, you won't have a public service broadcaster intact any longer at all. And RTE wouldn't be able to continue to do the things it does, like whether it's through orchestras or Irish language programming or minority interest programming or right across the board, we wouldn't have a public service broadcaster intact. Now, we'd still have public service broadcasting from a lot of different broadcasts, but we wouldn't have one organisation.
And it wouldn't be being done by public servants.
Well, I don't know what you mean by that. Why? I mean, it doesn't matter who's doing it.
What you're saying is that
it doesn't matter who's doing it. If the programs are good, no. If the programs are good, I don't care who produces them. Yeah. You know, if I'm a listener or a viewer,
yeah, but
and the program is good,
funding for them.
Well, you
which
want,
is set aside.
It's a question.
For
see, it's not a question of entitlement. It's a question of the listener and the viewer and providing good entertainment and good current affairs programming to people sitting in their homes and cars and everywhere else. That's what we want to do. But
yes,
if you undermine RTE so much in terms of its funding base that you make it impossible for it to continue by taking away large portions of the licence fee, well then what you're doing is you're effectively waving goodbye to RTE, it seems to me, at the end of the day. And maybe that's what we want to do.
So they can't
maybe
be
that's
just,
what people
listen,
want to do.
Stephen is back with us. Stephen, were you listening to that?
Hello. Yeah, nice, a bit better. Hello?
Hello, Stephen. Sorry, okay. Were you listening to what Alex White was saying there? Well, listen, how would you respond to that?
Well, you see, the licence fee here is used in a very different way, in that it only partly funds RTE. There's no way you could run RTE the way it's being run now if you only had the licence fee. What we need to understand here is that the licence fee funds less than half of RTE. It's the other half that relies on commercial funding. That's really the problem. If RTE was being run on just the licence fee, then you'd really pretty much have half the services it provides now. Now, maybe that's what people want. Maybe that's what we should have. The question would then be, what should those services be? He's right insofar as that the more you take off the licence fee, the more you're going to chip away at RTE. But then the more RTE are going to try to pull in commercial income to make up the difference. So it doesn't really sort of answer anything. The BBC is very different from RTE in that it is entirely funded by the licence fee. So if you like, to a certain extent, it has been protected from the crash. It's not reliant on commercial income. And the situation in Britain is that it's deemed important to have an alternative provider of national and regional news. That's the debate that's going on there. That's why they're talking about hiving some money off the licence fee to give to ITV. And what you have here is a very, very different situation where RTE is, if you like, the public service broadcaster and also the biggest commercial broadcaster, and that's what makes the situation different here.
First thing I would say, Mary O'Rourke.
Could I ask Stephen, what is the cost of your TV licence in the UK?
It's roughly equivalent to the licence fee in Ireland. It's slightly more. The difference is the size of population. There's so many more people in the UK, so income from the licence fee is much greater. Licence fee income in Ireland for RTE amounts to roughly in and around about €150 million. Yeah. And in 2007, RTE spent around about €400 million. So, because of the size of the population, the two situations are very different.
Although Leo Varadkar, surely one of the points is there that in the UK, they're very keen to keep an alternative source of public service broadcast, for instance, news and current affairs. Is there not a case for that in this country? That it doesn't necessarily all have to be provided by the state broadcaster.
No, it doesn't. I think there is. Unfortunately, it should have been done a long time ago, and now is the bad time to do it. But a portion of the license fee should go to other broadcasters who provide public service radio shows and TV shows. In my view, problem is now is this is now happening at a time of a financial crisis for RTE. That this should have been done.
Just go back to Stephen to wrap up on that because we're running out of time. Stephen, is there any realistic possibility of that happening here, do you think, in the Republic?
Well, I think what the Republic needs more than anything else, Sam, is a debate about public service broadcasting, what it wants from public service broadcasting and how that should be funded, because the model RTE is working on now dates from 1959. You know, the media, even in Ireland, has moved on quite a lot since then, and I think, you know, discussions like this are good because there is no perfect solution, but because there's never been a proper debate, you're never going to get a solution if you go about it that way. So, I mean, long live the discussion, I think.
It is Alex White, 1959. That was 2 years before Gay Byrne started the late show.
Well, that was the debate. That was the discussion prior to RTE being set up and the Broadcasting Act in 1960. But I don't think it's... I think Stephen's absolutely right and very interesting in the points he makes. But I think we have had debate about this in the 80s.
Had the Broadcasting Bill.
And we had it in the 90s. And we've had a new Broadcasting Bill now. The question of like what the balance between public service broadcasting and you know, independent broadcasting should be and how it should be funded. Definitely there should be a debate about it, but I don't think it would be quite fair to say that we haven't discussed it since 1959.
Yeah, but what you were saying earlier about is the danger of diluting the quality of RT, but RT produces an awful lot of things that people would think, why on earth do you need a public service broadcaster to provide, you know, pop radio? Why do you need public service radio to do...
Well, it is the point that Stephen makes, that, you know, it's a hybrid. It goes from, you know, what would be regarded as straight public service remit.
A hybrid,
right,
that means whatever you wanted to do, actually.
Well, it's also commercially funded. It also has to gain advertising, it has to get ads, and it has to sell ads. And, you know, people make judgments about the
argument. But, you know,
I'm again nervous about this notion that you're putting me into the corner of defending RTE. I mean, if RTE can just defend themselves, I'm not here to defend them. But
and
I can
they
see,
did
I can
good
see,
job when
I can
they
see
in.
Why they have to be commercial because they're
no, but
keep
you passionately
they do
believe,
a very good
so
sport. I do believe it passionately. Yeah. I do believe in public service broadcasting, and I do believe in having a strong public service broadcaster. And I think that we should defend it. And I think we've got fantastic sports broadcasting from RTE, brilliant current affairs broadcasting from RTE, really, really excellent stuff. We also get a lot of you know what as well, which is
okay,
a word that Albert once used.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's the way it is.
What a shame you didn't keep up your pension payments. You've done a great job,
RTE. We do have to actually question some public service broadcasting where nobody watches it. You know, no matter how much it costs, there's no point in
that would just be a Oireachtas report.
If nobody watches it, why should we pay?
Well, there is the point. It's the one thing you guys would go mad if it was taken off. Anyway,
in fairness to RT employees, I think you're fair to them as public servants. They're technically they're not, and they actually don't that you don't get defined benefit pensions. They
they're
taking substantial pay cuts. They don't get increments. So you know, they have to take a lot of pay in order.
Presumably, you wouldn't take religious programming off the air just because a small number of people watch that.
I didn't even know you wanted to, Alex. Anyway,
that's actually the question I have to ask. I can't remember how much the license fee is. It's 150 euros a year.
Someone is going to say that's a real Labour Party question.
We actually have to ask people what they want for the 150 euros that they're paying. That money shouldn't go into programmes.
All of that we will do, but we have to take a break first. Don't you forget, you can text us 083-4100-102. That's thanks to 3 Mobile.
100 to 102 Today FM, the Sunday supplement with VHI Healthcare, dedicated to one thing and one thing only, your health.
Welcome back, I'm Sam Smith. This is the Sunday supplement. On our panel today, Mary O'Rourke, Leo Varadkar, Alex White. I'm getting a lot of calls. Here's one. Sam, is by any chance, is Leo wearing a white robe with a large red cross in front of it?
No, we can say he's not.
Well, I didn't even know this was a fancy dress programme.
There you go. Public service.
Yeah, another caller from Limerick says, I teach in a 20-teacher primary school where approximately half of the staff are under 30. There is not one of us who wants to teach religion. I personally have no regard for the silly rituals promoted by the Catholic Church, and I resent being obliged to spend a half an hour every single day teaching religious instruction. The person did not give their name, which is hardly surprising. But do you think would many people feel like that now, Mary, of the younger generation?
They would enter into if she clearly went to a teacher training college here in Ireland, she would have known that was part of the agenda that she would be teaching.
Yeah. It
comes with the territory. So I'm surprised that she feels that affronted by it now when she would have known that was her career open to her.
Yeah, I didn't know that. But anyway, across the Atlantic, that there is a gentleman by the name of Ed Hayes who's about to address the Irish nation. Hi, Ed.
Hey, how you doing?
Okay, well, what's new with you?
What's new in New York, the biggest thing in New York that people talk about, one of the biggest things, there was a guy that he went on the run in 1989 for stealing some millions of dollars through a scam from the city. Basically, it's a glorified welfare front. And he got arrested about 18 years later in England. His name is Tuvius Stern. He's in jail. He got 2.5 to 7.5. And the rabbi for the ultra-Orthodox or the Orthodox prisoners, which believe it or not has a large contingent in jail, he ran a bar mitzvah for the guy, a catered bar mitzvah, where they brought in 60 guests to the prison. Some of the prison officials attended the bar mitzvah, and his son came in and they had singers and a band and everything else. And they got caught. And so they actually really not very much happened to them. They suspended the rabbi. And then they found out that not only had the rabbi done that, but the rabbi would have a truck pull up to the back of the jail and deliver food for the Orthodox Jewish inmates. And he also had all the Orthodox Jewish inmates put in one prison, which was the safest, easiest to get to jail in the system in downtown New York. So he could make sure he could get the food delivered to him, and also make sure that they were in the best possible conditions. Now, the other thing that happens is that when they find out that this is going on, they also find out that he's been regularly giving nice presents to the prison supervisors and has been getting them promoted. In other words, if a prison warden or a supervisor helps him, he gets the guy either promoted or transferred someplace that makes his life more convenient to get to and from his house. So even by New York standards, that's pretty unusual. Now, we have a substantial ultra-Orthodox community in Brooklyn, which has a very disproportionate political power for two reasons. One is that they vote virtually 100% based on what their rabbis tell them to do. So it's a significant voting block. And the second thing is they make their political contributions in cash, which always tends to win friends and influence people.
Wow. And tell me, where, I mean, who's the governor of this prison? Does he not have a say on how?
Yeah, they suspended him. But the thing about it is, really, that's not very much to have happen to you. I mean, under the circumstances.
Is he suspended on full pay?
Yeah, sure he is. I mean, the thing about it is that the guy ran a bar mitzvah in the jail. They took over like a gym in the jail and had guests come in. You got to understand this. It wasn't just other convicts in there. He had 60 people come in with a singer and a band.
And alcohol.
And I don't know about alcohol, but I assume so. You know what they bring these guys? They bring them smoked. On a regular basis, they bring them smoked salmon and roast beef.
Well, that sounds pretty good, Ed.
Yeah, it's not bad if you're in the can, you know? I tell you a funny story. I went to jail. I was going to federal prison to see a client of mine who at the time I think was a killer for the mafia. And I'm in there, and there's a couple of rabbis in there. And I'm with another lawyer, and I said, what is this? I didn't know they had that many Jews in jail. They need rabbis. And they have a whole ultra-Orthodox wing. They get locked up for frauds on the government. And there's kosher prison wings where they bring in kosher food. And of course what happens is because of the political influence, it turns into some kind of corruption. But Bloomberg is really embarrassed because the guy's been walking around for years saying, I have so much political influence that you guys better do what I say. And of course it turned out to be true. He did have political influence.
Yeah, but surely if there were Muslims, that many Muslims in New York prisons, they would be entitled to the same dietary considerations and so on as Jewish prisoners, wouldn't they?
Yeah, but they'd be food that you'd be supplied by the prison, not brought in by somebody in a truck.
Yeah.
Right?
And caterers were going in to cater in the prison, yeah?
Yeah, sure. They had caterers. Outside caterers that came into jail. And the second thing, on a regular business, he would have outside caterers bring better quality food to the jail. And third, he was advancing the careers of prison officials that were helping him.
He sounds like some guy, but do you know what I can't figure out there?
Yeah, his name is Glebe.
Glebe? Yeah. How could he have that much clout over the careers of people in the prison service?
Well, what happened is that, first of all, the prison service is kind of a life unto itself, because one of the big things about New York is that we keep a lot of our prisoners on literally an island called Rikers Island. And there's nobody on that island but convicts and prison officials. There's not a lot of scrutiny of what goes on there. So, and the other thing is he was appointed by Giuliani, and the word just got around that he had a lot of influence, and people started asking him for favors, and they got him. And that increased his influence. It's just ridiculous. I mean, when you think about it.
Ed, listen, we're running out of time now, but did you have something about some festival in Tennessee?
Oh, yeah, listen, we have a, you may have heard years ago, we had a music festival in Woodstock, which was a big cultural effect event. But now they have a music festival every year in Tennessee called Bonnaroo. And it's developed into this huge cultural event. We have hundreds of thousands of people that come. And you have people like Jamaican reggae bands, African bands, Metallica, and Bruce Springsteen.
Wow.
And it's becoming a major American cultural event. It's really it's very well run. It's very environmentally correct. It's just a wonderful, wonderful event. And you can find it on YouTube. If you go to YouTube.
Have you been there, Ed, or what?
I haven't. I'd love to go, man. I'm about three times as old as most of the people that go there. But my brother's Bruce Springsteen's lawyer.
Is he?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Can I ask you something, Ed? It's Mary O'Rourke here in Dublin. Is Obama still tops?
Oh, yeah. He's very,
everywhere.
Very
Is
very popular here.
Oh, good, good.
You know what the biggest advantage he has, Mary, is that he's a likable guy. He stands out in front of you. He's not a pig. He's not cruel or harsh or anything. It's just he comes across as a good fella. You know, he's doing the best he can. He's got all gray hair now, though. Have you seen him? His hair
but he's staying up, though. You know the way people go up and down. He's staying up.
But to hear you say the word Goodfellas there, you were actually in the film Goodfellas, weren't you?
I was. I don't mean it like that.
Were you Goodfella?
Goodfella usually means wise guys, gangsters, mafia guys. They refer to each other. If you're a certain rank in a mafia, you're a Goodfella.
Quick, Ned, for those of our listeners who are fascinated by you, whereabouts in the film do you appear?
I played a role of Robert De Niro's lawyer in the last scene.
Yeah?
Yeah, because I have been Robert De Niro's lawyer, so it's like an inside joke.
Listen, Ed, we have to go now. So listen, look forward to speaking to you again next week, and thank you very much for your contribution today. And don't you forget out there, you can text us 083-4100-102. That's thanks to 3 Mobile.
100-102 Today FM, the Sunday supplement with VHI Healthcare, dedicated to one thing and one thing only, your health.
Welcome back. I'm Sam Smith. On our panel today, Mary O'Rourke, Leo Varadkar, Alex White. And no point in texting now, but if you want to, you could go on 083-4100-102. That's thanks to 3 Mobile. Listen, the one thing that was grabbing a lot of people this week, we thought it had gone away and it came back. Mary O'Rourke, Pat Kenny and his neighbour are at it again. The guards were called. Some row over this right away thing. Now it's about a gate. Apparently, Pat wants it left open. His neighbour would like it closed. Have you followed that at all?
I have, because I thought they settled it out of court in a sensible fashion, as I would have thought Pat Kenny would have settled matters. So I cannot understand why it's all erupting again. It sounds just like it's just bad news, and you can't live cheek and jowl with your neighbour in some sort of measure of civility on either side, because I'm quite sure there are matters the other side too which haven't come out. But I don't know anymore. Perhaps Alex, who might know a thing or two about
matters broadcasting. Alex is a very wise man. Dare I suggest...
I get you back for that now, Mary.
Mary, may I suggest a solution?
Yes.
I hope to be wise.
Well,
Alex will look at me.
Oh, good.
Now, the question is that I think Pat has said that this gate is left open because he fears at night for his wife's safety. Well, if she has to get out of her car to close that gate after her, his neighbour, so therefore it's left open because he doesn't want to get out of the car. Pat's neighbour, Mr. Charlton, would like it closed. So that apparently seems to be the cause of their problem.
Pat, get out of bed to meet his wife.
You know, one of those things you can press the little zapper in your car and it opens and closes. Alex, now you're a wise man.
That sounds like an eminently sensible solution, Sam. I think it's one that you should communicate to both parties after the programme is finished.
Well, the word is...
Who knows, you might even be able to charge for that.
No, but I don't know about charge, but I think Mr. Rory Brady, the former Attorney General, was the person who arbitrated in the last
dispute.
It was
crying out to be either settled or arbitrated, and it was, in the end, that's exactly what happened. I know, in my experience in the course, the one area of dispute that there's a huge reluctance to have opened up in court, and judges in particular hate them, are boundary disputes. And, you know, maybe this one grabbed a lot of people during the week, Sam. I have to say that maybe I had my mind elsewhere during the week. It didn't grab me.
You'd
offence to either party.
Huge high thoughts. We're ordinary mortals.
I wasn't having particularly high thoughts. I was trying to get a bit of sleep. But I can tell you that this particular dispute, it may have grabbed people, but it didn't grab me.
No, that's because obviously you're too wise to get involved.
Nothing to do with being wise.
As what other people do on their coffee break. Leo, you must admit this is the sort of thing people talk about in their coffee break. What the hell's that fella Pat Kenny and his neighbour going on with and so forth? Do you not agree that that is known as water cooler?
That may well be the case, but I've no interest in it personally.
What would you do
if I was?
If you were Minister for Justice and this
about
was
Pat
happening?
Absolutely nothing.
Well, you see, you've got to do so. Oh, something else too. Somebody's written down here, Alex. And that is, and my producer Mary and I spoke about it earlier. During the campaign, you were described, I think, by your wife as an alpha male. What does
so
that
I believe,
mean?
Yeah.
Does it mean you're a very lusty fellow? Does it mean you're...
Well, I think you might have to ask her. I mean, I think that's a description that, you know, somebody made and was carried in a newspaper. Is it in the eye of the beholder? I don't know. I couldn't possibly comment.
Does modesty sit easily with an alpha male, do you think, Mary?
Not at all. They'd be very blustery and open about it and exhibiting their reasons why they're called an alpha male. And Alex kind of does, really. Not blustery, but I'd agree with what she said.
I go on, Arnold Schwarzenegger, Leo, is often described as an alpha male and so on.
Big biceps.
And the parts that he played.
Yeah, yeah. I always thought an alpha male was a prima donna with a Y chromosome.
With a Y. Asking the question why all the time. And anyway, that's not fair. Alex is blushing here, which is not very fair at all.
Alpha males don't blush.
I don't blush.
True, really? Yeah, they don't.
They shouldn't.
Tell me. Oh yeah, the end of nightclubs and restaurants. Ronan Ryan's Town Bar and Grill, Robbie Fox's Rain.
Now there's a story that's been grabbing people.
But the Town Bar and Grill is still open. I was there Wednesday night. Mary Hannafin brought all the women of the Dáil, Janet, for her 50th birthday party.
Yeah,
and it was booming and packed.
Why did she just bring
solid? Because that's who she invited.
It's very sexist.
Not at all. She wanted chums that she'd talk with. And we all talked together. And we talked about G. That's when we talked about.
Well, Johnny Ronan has stepped in there, apparently.
Is he the mystery benefactor?
I think so.
I mean, shareholder or whatever, yes.
Of Treasury Holdings. Yeah.
Yes, but it was packed. They were standing on counters and...
It's a good restaurant, though,
isn't it? It is, yes. I can't understand.
Were you ever in Reynards, Leo?
Many a time, but not in recent years.
Yeah. Is it a big loss to the city, do you think?
I think it is a loss to the city. There's plenty of other clubs as well, obviously.
Alex?
Yeah, I think it is.
As an alpha male?
We need to look again at those nightclub laws, though. You know, the cost of getting a late licence is prohibitive. Yeah. And
but also the fact of the closing. I mean, you know, what's happened for nightclubs is that the closing time for pubs, which has been extended, is more or less coinciding now with the closing times for nightclubs. So there isn't an added advantage. Or at least, you know, the nightclubs have lost an advantage they previously had. And I think that's wrong. I think any city, any kind of modern city should have nightclubs, well-run, well-managed, properly organised nightclubs. And I think it is actually a loss.
And people have to pay a premium because the people who work there have to be paid a premium.
And it's another potential role for more local government, you know, is to allow local authorities to decide. You know, like Reynards is not the kind of place where a late bar is going to disturb people in the neighbouring housing estate, you know, and there should be a real role for local authorities in deciding for themselves in their own towns and cities what type of...
Well, I suppose Robbie Fox, do we give him a title of some sort now? We bring in an honour system at some stage for
anything like that. Can you imagine the kind of people who would have got honours in the last 10 years?
Well, no, that's not to cast any aspersions at all on Robbie Fox. A very decent fellow, never did me anything but good turns. Anyway, I suppose it's time to say goodbye, so I have to thank everybody today. To Mary O'Rourke, thank you very much. Leo, thank you very much. Alex, thank you very much. Also to Stephen Price and to Ed Hayes, our US correspondent. And of course, my producer, Mary Carroll, our engineer, Shane Dempsey, and to Kate O'Toole, who was on the phones. We'll be back same time next week. Talk to you then. Bye.